Hey, I'm Blaze Ganey. I'm here with Julie Evanstein, a lawyer for the ACLU's Voting Rights Project. Now, during the legislative process, the ACLU came out and was not shy about saying that this was unconstitutional. Amendment 4 implementation was not needed and that they should not put a financial barrier between who can and can't vote. Can you explain exactly how that is unconstitutional?
We very adamantly supported Amendment 4. Florida was one of the only four states that took people's voting rights away for life for any felony conviction. And Amendment 4 really was a first step towards reversing a huge and historic injustice where 1 in 10 Florida adults was disenfranchised, more than 1 in 5 African-American Floridians were disenfranchised. Amendment 4 is really the first step to correcting that historic wrong and that real mark on democracy in Florida. What we saw the legislator do in response is try to disenfranchise people who couldn't afford to pay their fines, fees, and restitution obligations. And for us, the ability to vote shouldn't be based on the size of somebody's bank account. It shouldn't be based on whether they can pay fees that go towards supporting the Florida court system. It should never be based on or be denied because of somebody's wealth or lack of wealth.
So prior to the bill passing, I know felons could get their rights back through clemency, and often through that process, they wouldn't be required to pay back all fines and fees, but rather they'd be converted to a civil lien and they'd pay that off over time. Now, the new law changes that and requires that felons pay off all their fines and fees before they can vote. But it does have two exceptions, a termination provision and conversion provision. The termination provision requires a felon to get approval from the third party who they owe fines and fees to clear all of their fines and fees. And then once they go to a judge, the judge can then waive that they won't have to pay those fines and fees before receiving the right to vote. The ACLU believes that's highly unlikely to happen, and they have a similar stance on the conversion provision.
As far as the community service provision, I mean, that's problematic, too. So like you say, there's not a standard in place that requires courts to consider somebody's wealth when they look at whether to convert to community service. There are 67 counties, and the research that we have on it from the Brennan Center found that only 17 of those counties even granted community service conversion for felony-related debt. So it's a very limited number of people who have actually received one of these conversions. And then on top of that, people don't often have lives where they can commit to hundreds and hundreds of hours of unpaid work via community service in order to work off a debt. And of course, I'm all for volunteer work and people doing community service. But when your fundamental right to vote depends on it and your rights are going to be violated until you can find hundreds of hours to work, sometimes at minimum wage, you're not getting paid, but that's the way that your debt is slowly going down. It's just not a real alternative that people can access in order to get their voting rights back. It's more of an illusion to put in that discretionary provision at all.
And I think you really hit the pin on the head with that, as far as a lot of these people don't have time to give. A lot of these people don't have money to give. And a lot of that is because they are a felon. A lot of people know about when they apply someplace, they have to let people know whether or not they've ever been convicted of a felony act. That alone makes it hard for them to find jobs. That alone makes it hard for them to pay rent. And if they can't pay rent, I'm sure they're not focused on paying fees and fines that they got while they were in prison.
A prior conviction is something that can come up in a job interview or can otherwise prevent you from getting gainful employment. It can be difficult to comply with parole when you have a demanding job or to comply with your job requirements when you're on parole. And like you said, some of the case law that has to do with protecting people against being punished for being poor, it comes from this area of law that relates to debtors' prisons, which is to say you can't revoke somebody's probation and send them back to prison because they're unable to pay their fines and fees unless you have a hearing to determine whether they're just refusing to pay or whether they're actually unable to pay. So if people are unable to pay fines and fees, you can't take away a significant constitutional right like like their right to liberty and to not be locked up. In the same way, we look at this law that the legislator passed and we say, well, if you don't determine whether or not somebody can pay, for the people who are trying to pay but can't, right, the people who are putting $10 or $20 or $100 towards their payments every month, and who are complying with whatever the requirements are and making a good faith effort to get what they owe paid, you can't just keep denying them the right to vote, extend their disenfranchisement, and have them sit out election after election after election until they, they're able to afford it.
All right, thanks. And that's Julie Ebenstein, lawyer for ACLU, and I'm Blaze Ganey.